Let me encourage you to be present tonight at 6 o'clock. We've got some young men that are going to be here tonight to sing, that if you have never heard the a cappella vocal band sing, you need to be here tonight and receive a blessing beyond description. I looked back there and saw those guys here. They came over early this morning, I believe, from Tulsa. Is that right? And you need to be here at 6 o'clock and hear them sing. I know they will bless your lives. Guys, would you all stand so we might see who you are and where you are? A cappella vocal band, right back there. We are delighted to have those brothers with us. And tonight at 6, they will be ministering to us in song. I hope you'll invite some friends and be here. Let me encourage. Children's Bible Hour tonight is not going to happen. We would like all the children to be in here and be blessed by a cappella. The nursery will be attended. And so up through nursery age, up to age 2, there will be nursery care provided. But all of our children, 3-year-olds and up, we would like for them to hear these brothers sing tonight at 6 o'clock. I hope you'll have them here and listen to them sing. I've had several Aggies come up to me this morning and remind me that I'm a graduate of Texas Tech and that yesterday Texas A&M beat them 50-15. I didn't really appreciate all that reminder about what happened. Kelly Phelps is down here. Kelly is former quarterback at OU, and he didn't want anybody reminding him about USC last week either. So Kelly and I are going to stick together in this deal, and don't be getting on us. Right, Kelly? That's right. If you have your Bibles, will you open them, please, to the 10th chapter of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 10. In a few moments, we're going to read beginning at verse 11. Hebrews chapter 10. I've learned some things this past week about bridges that I didn't know before. For example, the bridge over the Royal Gorge is only about 30 feet long. 30 feet. It looks like you could almost jump it. And the key word is almost. Because at the bridge, from the rim of the canyon where the bridge is across, it's straight down over 1,100 feet at the Royal Gorge. To give you some perspective about how deep that is, that's 110 floors of a skyscraper. You could take the Empire State Building in New York City and put it in the bottom of that gorge and jump from the rim of the canyon to the roof of the Empire State Building, and the fall, the jump to the roof would kill you. That's how deep 1,100 feet is. That's a bridge, 30 feet, that spans that chasm that looks like it has no bottom. There's a bridge between East and West Germany that spans the wall. It's not a very elaborate bridge. It's not very expensive to build, not very impressive to look at. But boy, on either side of that bridge, there are two different worlds. On one side, there is communism and oppression. And on the other side, there's democracy and freedom. On the one side, there's tyranny, and on the other side, freedom. Two different worlds spanned by a bridge, and your life would be very different depending on which side of the bridge you live on, that bridge that spans the wall. Our most famous bridge in this country, without question, is the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, the Bay Area. 4,200 feet long, that bridge is. It took a lot of time and trouble to build that bridge. They didn't know if they were ever going to finish it. They had fog that would come in on occasion so thick where they were building that bridge that the workers said they couldn't even see their hand in front of their face. They'd have storms characteristic of that area that would come up suddenly and would make work havoc for them as they worked on that bridge. And then, of course, the currents in that Bay Area are so strong that it threatened to tear away anything that they tried to erect in that bay. Add to that the earthquakes that are characteristic of that part of the country that threaten every single day to take down anything constructed along that area. And you've got some idea what kind of bridge that is. If you've ever been to the Bay Area and crossed the Golden Gate Bridge, you know you have to pay a toll. Now, if you don't have enough money to pay the toll, you can leave something with the toll collector of equal value, and they'll let you go on across the bridge. One toll collector was telling about some of the things he'd collected. He got a book on one occasion. He got a frying pan on one occasion. He got a can of motor oil on one occasion. He got a set of sterling flatware that somebody left with him on one occasion. On one occasion, he said a man left his wedding ring and came back later to claim it. But he said the most expensive thing he'd ever received was a $7,000 diamond watch that somebody left with him at the bridge and never ever came back to claim. But he said the most interesting thing was a set of false teeth that a guy came back and claimed immediately. Of course, made famous by the movie, there's the bridge over the River Kwai. Amazing story how they built that bridge. It was in World War II, and British prisoners of war were being held captive by the Japanese during the Japanese occupation of Burma. They felt that the building of that bridge was absolutely strategic to their success, the Japanese did, so they had the British soldiers trying to build it. They had taken all of the leaders, all the officers, and isolated them from the enlisted men, and they were having all kinds of trouble trying to build that bridge. So when the Japanese finally put their leaders back with the enlisted men, the British began to architect and build a bridge that even boggled the minds of the Japanese. They couldn't believe those guys could build that kind of bridge under those kinds of circumstances. When the British homeland learned that bridge was in place, I mean, right after it was finished, they came in and blew that bridge to smithereens because it was such a key bridge in that war. I've learned some things about bridges that are pretty characteristic. Number one, bridges are built in the most unlikely places. I mean, you find a hole in the ground that seems like it has absolutely no bottom, and right there you find a bridge. You find a bay with storms and fog and raging currents and 4,200 feet between pieces of land, and right there you find, of all things, a bridge. You find two worlds. Communism on one side, democracy on the other. Oppression on one side, freedom on the other. And right there, you find a bridge. Notice something else about bridges. You find bridges where you expect to find roadblocks and walls and barriers. I mean, you're driving along and you come up on this chasm 1,100 feet deep, and you would think that there would be a sign there, roadblock, that says, road ends here, no passage. But lo and behold, right there you find a bridge. You find some of the most uncrossable, unpassable things in the world, and right there you'll find some of the greatest bridges in our world. Because they're built in places you'd expect no passageway. I learned something else about bridges that are characteristic. Bridges are built when there is no other way to cross. When you can't jump it, and you can't swim it, and you can't go around it, and you can't drive down through it and get on the other side. There you find bridges. Bridges are built where there's no other way to cross. One final characteristic about bridges. Every time you cross a bridge, it involves trust. Trust. You cannot cross a bridge without entrusting yourself and your life to that bridge that is going to hold you up. Now, with all that background in mind, I want to point you to the last bridge we're going to talk about this morning. And I want us to read together three or four verses from Hebrews 10, beginning at verse 11. The Hebrews writer says, day after day, every priest stands and performs his religious duties. Again and again, he offers the same sacrifices, listen, which can never take away sins. But when this priest, speaking of Jesus, when this priest had offered for all time one sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. Since that time, he waits for all of his enemies to be made his footstool, because by one sacrifice, He has made perfect forever those who are being made holy. The work of a priest is the center of this passage. And the Bible refers to Jesus in this passage as this priest. If you were to go to a Bible dictionary and look up the term priest, it would say beside it, see Latin, pontifex. And so you go to the Latin pontifex and you find out that the number one definition of that term pontifex is, guess what? Bridge builder. Bridge builder. Our Vice President, George Bush, told about going in the end of 1982 to Moscow to attend the funeral of a fallen Soviet premier whose name was Leonid Brezhnev. Bush said that experience was something like he'd never seen before. He went as a representative of our nation to attend that funeral. As all the leaders of the world began to gather there and pay their last respects to this one who led one of the most powerful countries in the world. He said during the entire thing, there was not one mention of hope, not one mention. Not one mention of God, not one mention of life hereafter. There was no mention at all. It was a hopeless, sad, somber situation. He said he watched his single file, all of these leaders from the communist bloc countries file by one, expressionless as they walked by the lifeless form of Leonid Brezhnev. He said the Western leaders were there, and one by one they filed by the casket of Leonid Brezhnev, looking into the lifeless form that was in the box. He said after the masses had filed by one, he said he positioned himself in such a way that he could see the people as they came by the casket. The Secret Service man had loaned him his binoculars, and Bush looked through the binoculars as finally he caught a glimpse of Mrs. Brezhnev. Mrs. Brezhnev came to the casket, leaned over it as she grieved, looked around to see if there was anyone close enough to see what she was doing, and then carefully pulled something from her purse and laid it on the chest of her dead husband. Bush said, I was in such a place that I could see what she put on the chest of her husband. It was a cross. A cross. Symbol of our faith. And symbol of a bridge whereby God opened the way, spanned the chasm, that a man might find entrance into the presence of God. Whatever else you might say about what happened at Calvary, one thing is for certain, a bridge was constructed there. A bridge. You can read the account from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and every time you read it, there is one idea that begins to impress itself on your heart. A bridge was built there that somehow spanned the difference between heaven and earth, between a righteous God and a lost humanity. There is a bridge built at the cross. And that somehow when one comes to the cross, he can go across the bridge that leads to God. He is the bridge. You know, the world was looking for a bridge when Jesus came. The Bible in 1 Corinthians 1 talks about the fact that the Jews were looking for a bridge. They wanted a certain kind of sign that said, this is the kind of bridge that we want. They wanted a military Messiah who was going to come in riding on a white steed and sword flashing. They were going to run Rome back to Rome and kick them out of their homeland. They wanted a bridge that was a ruling king. They didn't want a carpenter nailed to a tree because they didn't want that kind of Messiah. They rejected him. The Greeks were also looking for a bridge, but they thought it would be some kind of an intellectual stimulation kind of a thing. They wanted to play mental gymnastics. That was the way of the Greeks. They certainly didn't expect the bridge to look like a cross. In fact, they thought it was stupid. You know, archaeologists have found the earliest etching of a cross. It's found on the wall of a cave not far from Rome. And very carefully drawn on the side of that cave is the etching of a cross, and attached to it is the body of a man nailed to that cross. But instead of a man's head on its shoulders, from the head up, there is the head of an ass, the head of a donkey. And etched in Latin, it says, Alexamenos adores his God. That's what the Greeks thought about the cross. It was stupid. They didn't expect at all that God would come and build a bridge that was looking like a cross. You know, maybe this morning you've come looking for a bridge. It may be that the things in your life have caused such pain and heartache and despair. You have tried to find a bridge in every kind of place in the world. You've looked for a bridge in pleasure. You've looked for it in career and job opportunities. You look for it in relationship. You've looked for it in material possessions that you could get more and more of. And everywhere you go, it just seems to turn out empty. You seem to be looking for a bridge that will just fill up that empty place inside. You don't expect it at all to look like a cross. I want you to know that when God constructed the bridge between Himself and mankind, He constructed it in the shape of a cross. You know, the cross isn't nearly as unpopular today among us as it once was centuries ago. Madonna, the rock star, famous for two things, a bare navel and a big gold cross that she wears around her neck. George Michael, also rock star, very popular these days. If you see any of his videos or picture, he's got a great big earring dangling from his left ear. It's a cross. And people put it on their lapels and they wear it around their necks and they decorate them, they put diamonds in them, and all the cross looks so beautiful and presentable. But people, it didn't start that way. For on the cross, someone had to die so that the bridge could be built and you could find your way to God. It was 8:45 p.m. and the 57-year-old pilot got his last-minute instructions before he taxied out onto the runway. By that date, he'd already logged over 20,000 hours of flight time. He'd heard those instructions from the tower thousands of times. Maybe that was part of the problem. It was just so familiar to him. Having received his final instructions, making the final checks, he taxied his Northwest Airlines Flight 255 out onto the runway. The throttle went forward, and the plane sped down the runway to get takeoff speed. And in the next 120 seconds, that airplane that was so beautifully streamlined and painted and shiny became a charred mess of ruins as it slammed into an embankment next to a road at the end of the runway. We don't know exactly what happened on that Northwest Airlines flight in that 120 seconds, but two things we know for sure happened. Two things. Number one, there was a computer-generated voice that kept saying seconds before the crash, over and over again, it kept saying, stall, 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 stall. A voice that was obviously neglected. The second thing we know for sure that happened on that airplane was that a 33-year-old nurse and mother by the name of Paula Seekin slipped out of her seat and spread her body over her 4-year-old child that was next to her, named Cecilia. After the impact, Paula Seekin burned to death. And so did Cecilia's father. And so did Cecilia's older brother. And so did 156 out of 157 people on board that jet that night. All burned to death. All except Cecilia. And somehow it grips me that a 33-year-old mother was willing to get out of her seat and spread her body over a 4-year-old child to to save her body from the flames. And that the last thing that happened before that beautiful airliner became a charred mess of ruins was a mother stretching herself out to save her daughter. Folks, that is exactly what happened at the cross. As Jesus spread himself out so that you and I might find a way to God. A song has been written by Ray Bolts. It's a song that really grips me. It's called Watch the Lamb. Watch the Lamb. A cappella vocal band is here, and I know that one of the songs they have sung of Ray Bolts is What Was I Supposed to Be? This is a later song that has been written, Watch the Lamb. It's a story of Simon of Cyrene. And it talks about Simon coming into Jerusalem with his two boys with him, Alexander and Rufus. They come all the way from Cyrene for the Passover to sacrifice a lamb to the Lord at the temple. And as they've come into the city is pressed full of people. Population in Jerusalem during Passover would swell 10 times its normal population. And the people are everywhere, and Simon is trying to point out this and point out that to his boys, but he has to keep telling the boys because they brought a lamb to sacrifice. He keeps telling them, watch the lamb. Watch the lamb. If you turn loose to the lamb and this crowd will be gone in a minute, we'll lose him. Watch the lamb. About that time, in an unexpected moment, a hand comes clamping down on Simon's shoulder. He turns around and a Roman soldier is standing there sternly looking at him and he says, carry that cross. Simon starts to object. The Roman grabs his sword and Simon immediately moves toward the cross. He picks it up. He finds that it's already wet. There's blood already on it. And Simon gets blood on his cheek and on his hand, on his robe, and it's sickening. And Simon is forced to carry this cross through this mob while all these criminals all the way out to the trash heap of the city. And in the process, he's separated from his boys. It's not until Calvary that the boys catch up to him. They come up panic-stricken to their dad. They're coming up like small children would do to their dad and saying, Daddy, Daddy, we lost you. And Daddy, we're afraid. And Daddy, we lost the lamb. We don't know where he went. Daddy, we lost him. Daddy, we're sorry. As if they had been oblivious to what was going on behind them, at that moment they turn in horror to see as Roman soldiers nail a carpenter from Nazareth to that cross. And as Simon sees the panic and the horror on the face of his boys as they nail Jesus to the cross, Simon reaches down and pulls two small boys up to his bosom and whispers into their ears and says, your children, dear children, watch the Lamb. Watch the Lamb. Simon knew a bridge was being built. A bridge that spans the flames and opens the way to God. A bridge that is the only way through the raging current of this life to give you hope. I want to read this and we'll be through. It's taken from a book written by Max Lucado. It's called, no wonder they call him the Savior. It's Max Lucado's thoughts, meditations, I guess you might say, as he contemplates the very last words of Jesus as he died on the cross. The last words Jesus spoke were, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And as Max reflected on that particular event, he wrote down these thoughts. I want to share them with you. It's called Take Me Home. Were it a war, this would be the aftermath. Were it a symphony, this would be the second between the final note and the first applause. Were it a journey, this would be the first sight of home. Were it a storm, this would be the sun making its first appearance through the clouds. But it wasn't. It was a Messiah. And this was a sigh of joy. Father, the voice is hoarse. The voice that called forth the dead, the voice that taught the willing, the voice that screamed at God now says, Father, Father, The two are one again. The abandon is now found. Listen, the schism is now bridged. Father, he smiles weakly. It's over. Yes, it's over. Satan's vultures have been scattered and hell's demons have been jailed. Death has been damned. The Son, S-U-N, is out. His Son, S-O-N, is out. It's over. An angel sighs. A star wipes away a tear. Take me home. Yes, take him home. Take this prince to his king. Take this son to his father. Take this pilgrim to his home. Come, 10,000 angels. Come and take this wounded troubadour to the cradle of his father's arms. Farewell, manger's infant. Bless you, holy ambassador. Go home, death slayer. Rest well, sweet soldier. The battle is over. And the bridge is finished. I don't know what you're searching for in life. But I know that to find your way into God, into His presence, you have to go across the bridge that God constructed. And that's the cross. His cross demands a response. It demands a response. More than just mental assent that says, yes, I believe that happened. More than just lip service that says, boy, wasn't that great about God doing that at the cross. Folks, His cross, our bridge, demands your life. All of it. And He says if you would cross the bridge into the presence of God, you must come by faith to Jesus Christ and to what He did at the cross for you. This morning, it's our prayer you'll respond to His call and His invitation. You might not even know what to do. You just know that you're searching and you've got questions and you want to know. That's why we're here. Ask us. But the bridge has been constructed for you. It is the only way to the Father. Would you come to Him right now while we stand and sing? Would you come? Let me encourage you to be present tonight at 6 o'clock. We've got some young men that are going to be here tonight to sing, that if you have never heard the a cappella vocal band sing, you need to be here tonight and receive a blessing beyond description. I looked back there and saw those guys here. They came over early this morning, I believe, from Tulsa. Is that right? And you need to be here at 6 o'clock and hear them sing. I know they will bless your lives. Guys, would y'all stand so we might see who you are and where you are? A cappella vocal band, right back there. We are delighted to have those brothers with us. And tonight at 6, they will be ministering to us in song. I hope you'll invite some friends and be here. Let me encourage. Children's Bible Hour tonight is not going to happen. We would like all the children to be in here and be blessed by a cappella. The nursery will be attended. And so up through nursery age, up to age 2, there will be nursery care provided. But all of our children, 3-year-olds and up, we would like for them to hear these brothers sing tonight at 6 o'clock. I hope you'll have them here and listen to them sing. I've had several Aggies come up to me this morning and remind me that I'm a graduate of Texas Tech and that yesterday Texas A&M beat them 50-15. I didn't really appreciate all that reminder about what happened. Kelly Phelps is down here. Kelly is former quarterback at OU, and he didn't want anybody reminding him about USC last week either. So Kelly and I are going to stick together in this deal, and don't be getting on us. Right, Kelly? That's right. If you have your Bibles, will you open them, please, to the 10th chapter of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 10. In a few moments, we're going to read beginning at verse 11. Hebrews chapter 10. I've learned some things this past week about bridges that I didn't know before. For example, the bridge over the Royal Gorge is only about 30 feet long. 30 feet. It looks like you could almost jump it. And the key word is almost. Because at the bridge, from the rim of the canyon where the bridge is across, it's straight down over 1,100 feet at the Royal Gorge. To give you some perspective about how deep that is, that's 110 floors of a skyscraper. You could take the Empire State Building in New York City and put it in the bottom of that gorge and jump from the rim of the canyon to the roof of the Empire State Building, and the fall, the jump to the roof, would kill you. That's how deep 1,100 feet is. That's a bridge, 30 feet, that spans that chasm that looks like it has no bottom. There's a bridge between East and West Germany that spans the wall. It's not a very elaborate bridge. It's not very expensive to build, not very impressive to look at. But boy, on either side of that bridge, there are two different worlds. On one side, there is communism and oppression. And on the other side, there's democracy and freedom. On the one side, there's tyranny, and on the other side, freedom. Two different worlds spanned by a bridge, and your life would be very different depending on which side of the bridge you live on, that bridge that spans the wall. Our most famous bridge in this country, without question, is the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, the Bay Area. 4,200 feet long, that bridge is. It took a lot of time and trouble to build that bridge. They didn't know if they were ever going to finish it. They had fog that would come in on occasion so thick where they were building that bridge that the workers said they couldn't even see their hand in front of their face. They'd have storms characteristic of that area that would come up suddenly and would make work havoc for them as they worked on that bridge. And then, of course, the currents in that Bay Area are so strong that it threatened to tear away anything that they tried to erect in that bay. Add to that the earthquakes that are characteristic of that part of the country that threaten every single day to take down anything constructed along that area. And you've got some idea what kind of bridge that is. If you've ever been to the Bay Area and crossed the Golden Gate Bridge, you know you have to pay a toll. Now, if you don't have enough money to pay the toll, you can leave something with the toll collector of equal value, and they'll let you go on across the bridge. One toll collector was telling about some of the things he'd collected. He got a book on one occasion. He got a frying pan on one occasion. He got a can of motor oil on one occasion. He got a set of sterling flatware that somebody left with him on one occasion. On one occasion, he said a man left his wedding ring and came back later to claim it. But he said the most expensive thing